So for those of you who are just joining us, welcome to the Healing with the Arts Telesummit, how art and medicine is changing healthcare and lives today. And we're here tonight with Alex and Allison Gray. And the title of their presentation tonight is called The Healing Power of Art. And an artistic symbolic representation of the light body can transform the picture of health we hold in our mind. And tonight, Alex and Allison are going to discuss the healing path of the artist, including the wounded healer, shaman, artist archetype. They'll address the potential of art to evolve consciousness toward healing by integrating the shadow and creating energy fields that facilitate group soul enhancement. Whoa, there's one of those energy fields. You guys are powerful. And through their experience of community, the Grays will describe how ecstatic joy and mass revelry celebrates life and can ultimately lead to individual and communal uplifting. Now, just a little bit about Alex and Allison. Alex is a world-renowned artist, poet, and author, and is best loved for his paintings, which portray multiple dimensions of reality, interweaving biological anatomy with psychic and spiritual energies. And Alex's books, Sacred Mirrors, The Mission of Art, Transfigurations, and Art Psalms, trace the development of his work and the mystical experiences that have shaped his personal, spiritual, and artistic life. In fact, Alex's third and most recent monograph, Net of Being, addresses how his art is evolving the cultural body through icons of interconnectedness. And by the way, his artwork is on view at the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors, which is a nonprofit co-founded with Allison in 1996, which became a church in 2008. Now, Allison Gray is also an accomplished visionary artist, recognized for her symbol system representing chaos, order, and secret writing. And as I mentioned, she's the co-founder of the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors, and is a social sculpture co-created with Alex and community. Allison's paintings are exhibited and sold widely to corporate and private collections, including numerous commissions for permanent installations. And with a Master of Fine Arts degree from Tufts University and the Boston Museum School, Allison has been an educator and muse to artists for over 30 years. She's often an invited speaker at many conferences and symposia, and Allison has been a presenter at the Women's Visionary Congress in California and the Horizons Conference in New York City. And tonight, she's here with her husband, Alex. Welcome to Healing with the Arts, Alex and Allison.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. We're really looking forward to this. Healing is one of the primary, I would say, benefits of a thorough engagement of our creative spirit in whatever project that is what creative spirit is expressing through us. We're painters, but we also engage in a lot of other arts as well. And when we say that art is our religion, we're meaning all the arts. And
and inclusive of all religions.
Exactly, because all world religions have the creative force that they're expressing through. They're, each is has a kind of a unique expression of the one spirit that animates us all. And I think that, that each has a unique lens into that healing power. And the the source of all world religions, we'd have to say, would go back to the shamanic. And this is really an archetype that has come up powerfully for artists in the last few decades. And I think that it bears great relevance to the subject of healing, because these were both the kind of psychopomps of the and sorcerer, wizard, spiritual advisor types that usually lived on the edge of the village. They weren't quite like everybody, so they kind of gave them a little bit of space, you know. And they were weird. That was the other thing about authentic shaman and stuff. And so all of those things fit the typical archetype of the outsider type person who becomes creative and an artist. And so there's, and most of us, you know, at one time or another feel, you know, socially awkward or something, or that, and so all these feelings of separation and stuff are part of the initiatory rites of the shaman. They have to go through a kind of undoing in their healing path. They encounter forces that are overwhelming and, in fact, dismembering. That's part of the shamanic process. Lest we all go rushing into becoming shaman. There's a lot of psychological stuff, and in some ways, we can even just look at the metaphor of the or symbol of the shaman's path and see, in some ways, like that's more or less what I've done in my artwork, because I had a period where I was working with the dead, and the initiatory phase of the shaman is usually seen in going to the underworld and working with spirits, and usually the spirits of the dead. And so, and sometimes there's dismemberment involved. Anyway, I worked in a morgue for a while, and all of these things were starting to become relevant. And I started to go through my own kind of cathartic healing process as well. And this archetype, the of the wounded healer, that one becomes familiar with the vulnerabilities of personhood. And that opens the heart. The when one sees a friend or someone in pain or jeopardy or something like that, our heart is instantly expanded, and we're worried, we're concerned for their safety. And this is, it's natural. And so this yearning for their safety and for their welfare and everything is a natural spasm of the heart. And so the heart opening and heart breaking kind of path that we have as human beings can be somehow related to this wounded healer archetype, because the wounded healer, once they're dismembered, they do become remembered in a new way. And this is a way of thinking of consciousness transformation, of change of one's habits. These are how healing kind of decisions in our lives can take root when we change our behavior sometimes. And when we engage our creative energies, this is something that the shamans were also credited with. They had the visions. They brought back the art emblems. They brought back the symbols. They would make little totems. They would make healing fetishes. They were the ones that put the medicine into the medicine. And so they because they had spirit allies, these spirit allies that they worked with and that they had, you know, come undone with and then been put together by, these healing allies then go into their work as well. And so I believe that most all artists kind of have them, and whether they talk about them or not, and that everyone really works with a kind of, you can even call it the higher self, or you can think of it like an angel, that there's some spirit ally that you are working with. Maybe it's the, you know, deceased that you knew in some way. Maybe it's an aspect of oneself. Whatever it is, it's an alliance with a higher spiritual power that transcends your rational mind. And this is strangely part of an important part of the healing process. When we have a new picture of our own health and we have a new idea about how our healing can take place, the benefits that our mind has for the healing process, it's proven science. The placebo effect in itself is capable of healing us. That means our mind and body for much of our illness need only to be harnessed in the proper way in order to catalyze our own healing. And so as part of this shamanic process, where there's a breakdown, there's then the reassembly, and the wounded healer comes back with something to share, back with a boon. And so when we journey in any way, whether it's dreaming or looking within, or however we like to gain our inspiration as creative people, this is a kind of working on our spiritual alliances, and it's getting in touch with a force that lies beyond us. You can just call it the creative force if one doesn't want to talk about entities or spirits or something like that. But you can think of it as the flow of the cosmos, really. You know, I mean, a bit of the Big Bang is in every motion and thought that we have because it was there from the beginning. And so we're an echo of that, really. And just attempting to harness a teeny fragment of this cosmic energy that empowers us. We're all stars. We're all made by the stars. We are healing light itself. How could we not be made of light and light body? The sun was what gave us birth. We live by the light of the sun, by the food we eat that's been all green. And so the greening, as the world comes back to life, this is a perfect time for this in the Northeast. We're having the springtime and throughout the United States. And so this kind of the rich renewal of nature is what we as creative people tap into. We tap into that flow. And as healers and as consciously healing people, we embody that force. And the arts have always been the handmaiden of that. Allison, maybe you want to talk about how art has been a healing force in your life.
Well, you know what I want to talk about. What I wanted to say was that, Alex, you're brilliant, first of all. I love listening. I mean, you're just everything you say is so like a jewel. And you, in your book, The Mission of Art, which you wrote in 1997, you had a chapter called The Art of Goodwill, and inside of that chapter, you had a subchapter called Art and Healing. And so your insights about art and healing go way back, like you said, back to a time when you became, you know, very good at the anatomy and interested in the body itself and the physicality of the body and the workings of the body. But also, you know, that we have, over the years, with that interest, we have, you know, run into people that have been healed through art. That there was a woman that you ran into at a conference who came out of hospice in her 90s because she discovered art while she was in hospice. She went to the arts and crafts room, became an artist, and immediately got better, and they sent her home. You know, who knows how long she lived.
Right.
Remember, you were in Bolinas or something. But anyway, so we've had occasion to speak with people where they're healing changed their life, transformed their life, like that, through art. Now, I, you know, when we were asked to be part of this conference, my first thought, and I shared it with you, Alex, was that I don't feel like that I do art with healing in mind, okay? I just want to say that I have never felt that I was doing art to heal anyone else or really to heal myself. I didn't think of it that way. I don't think of myself as a healer. You know, some people are more teachers, some people are more healers, some people are more business people, whatever you feel drawn toward. I felt that the healing profession is so noble. It's so altruistic. It's so generous-hearted. It's so open-hearted that I never thought of myself as being that, okay? Seriously and truly. But I am a passionate artist, and I've always been an artist. I've never not been an artist. My identity is to be an artist. What is it about it that, you know, it must have some sort of healing for me, but I don't feel that I need healing. I mean, I feel that this is what it is for me. I just wanted to tell you. It's a meditation. So if you say meditation, that's very healing. Yes. So for that, yes, I do it as my meditation. And I've designed my work to be exercises inside of which I meditate. So, you know, I also know that the thrust of my work has been to point out the essentialized worldview that I have about the world. Like, if you were to say all things are made up of three things, for me, it would be chaos, order, and secret writing. So chaos is, you know, the representation that I created of the material world, where all things are in entropy and they're all falling apart, the material world. Systems exist, and they're falling apart. The order realm would be the realm of the mandala, the realm of the suckhole, blowhole, fountain and drain of light and energy and love that is interconnecting all beings and things with light and love. So that is that vast vista of our interconnectedness that sometimes we catch a glimpse of when we are either in an enlightened state, let's say that. So that's order, that's the bliss realm, nirvana, heaven. And it comes from the divine. It is the realm of the divine. So from the realm of the divine, we channel our creative energy into manifestation. And all manifestation is symbols, symbolic. Everything manifest. Everything in the manifest world is symbolic. You know, the table that my feet are up on is symbolic. My hair, which is gray, is symbolic. You know, everything that I say, all the mouth noises that are coming out of my mouth that you're understanding or not understanding right now is because you understand these symbols or you don't, if you're from all over the world. So anyway, we manifest symbols. We channel them from the divine. We manifest them through these windows that we call symbols. Anyway, so that's my essentialized worldview, where through the, you know, through the divine channel of the bliss realm, we manifest through into the world of systems that are breaking down, the chaos world. And that is the essentialized sort of the cycle of creativity, you know, is that. And it includes music and dance and all other kind of poetry and writing, certainly speaking, and all, and vocalizing, and all creativity is like that. It channels in, it goes through this window of symbols that are understood or not understood by a receiver out in the chaos world of things breaking down, and beautiful arrays of spectral systems that are all breaking down. So anyway, that is my commitment to my work is really about commitment. I've been working with Chaos Order and Secret Writing for 40 years since my master's thesis from Tufts in 1976, so it's going on 40 years. And anyway, so that's so my work is more, I feel, a meditation, and as far as my own personal healing, that is a very, very stabilizing and healing and transformative process that I've been going through for 40 years. And so for that, it is very healing. As far as for others, it being healing, my work being healing for others, I think if they meditate on it, like any tantra painting or any mandala, when you meditate on works of art that are imbued with great labor-intensive intention and spiritual and high intention, if you meditate on them, you will get infinite benefit, I think. So healing, yes, you could actually do that and use it as a healing tool if you wanted to. I never really thought of doing it for that. I really, it's really my meditation. It's my fun. It's my game. It's my puzzle. And I love to enter into my puzzle world every night for hours. So I paint every day that I can. Anyway, what else, Alex?
For me,
would you like to say something to your chapter?
Well, your painting is really like you're making a lighthouse, you know. Each stroke is like a brick, you know. And so your spirit shudders through each piece and radiates a beautiful, magnificent kind of snaky web of impasto across there. But one of the things
I love in
what you said was basically, if I can break it down, basically you're bringing heaven to earth through symbols. You take order, the order realm, I would call it heaven, and you're bringing it to earth, which would perhaps be a chaos realm, but through symbols. And so there's an interactivity of these elements. I think of them, even if you want to generalize more, as spirit and matter, if you're talking heaven and earth, and then you've got the element of the mind. And so the only place that symbols are relevant is within minds. There are no symbols if there aren't any minds. I mean, I'm not even sure what a cow thinks of a rock, you know, or a tree. Maybe that I would think that they know what it is, and the way that a cow knows what a tree is. But
wait, stop. Why don't we talk about art and healing from the chapter in your book, Something About Art and Healing?
Well, let's see. I think how about if I read a paragraph or two?
And then we'll respond to it. Beautiful.
Good. All right. Art and healing. Violence, illness, or accidents can come out of left field and strike us down. Sometimes we see how we've contributed to our condition. Sometimes it's a total mystery. Our health often depends on harmonizing the complex demands of mind and body. Stress can trigger illness. The inner friction of despair and self-hatred can lower our defenses and allow sickness to take hold in the body. Illness can come as a wake-up call to slow down and examine whether we're on the right track with our life's purpose. Art can serve the alignment of soul and smaller self through creative expression and thereby play a role in the healing process. An image of wellness and wholeness, a picture of health that a sick person aspires to, is an important aspect of getting better. Medical studies by Carl Simonton and Stephanie Simonton, Gene Octenberg, Frank Lawless, and a number of other physicians and psychologists working in the field of visualization therapy have demonstrated that a patient's positive imagery can accelerate post-surgical mending. To bolster the strength of their white blood cells, cancer patients visualize them in relation to personally meaningful symbols of health, such as Jesus or Mary or a white knight. They might also visualize the cancer as weak and confused. Such intentional guided visualizations have also proven to be an effective mind-body treatment in reducing stress and working through psychological issues and a variety of life problems. Imagery can powerfully affect our nervous and immune systems. The observation and analysis of active imagery from the unconscious, such as dreams or other visions, can be sources of intuitive guidance. The arts are a way to externalize this healing imagery. In the 20th century, the field of expressive arts has gained widespread use in psychotherapy. Patients have been asked to make art as a means of diagnosing their mental condition, and the healing potential of creativity is well recognized. Artists can make cathartic works to purge the psychic demons of sickness, the fears of mortality, anger, grief, guilt, and inner imagery of victimization. Some artists spend their lives portraying the demonic shadow, the vulnerable and pathological side of the mind. As long as artists remain true to their authentic experience and vision, there's healing value in their creative effort. Just as important is the creation of imagery of hope and renewal, of the self-transformed, radiant with life and already well and whole. Art is a natural expression of each artist's unique life force. Our most meaningful creative work comes from deep inside and is an affirmation of the energy and flow of life. Art that affirms life seeds the unconscious of both artist and audience with a positive message. Life is worth preserving and encouraging to achieve its highest potential.
Well, that was great.
That was
Wow. Beautiful,
Alex. That was fantastic.
Good.
Oh. Well, good. That's a little bit the... It takes examples, you know, just later that... maybe it'd be better to... did something come up?
Could I comment on that?
Please.
Well, it made me think of what I was doing in my art before 40 years ago. You know, I was thinking, you know, my art before I knew Alex, before I met Alex, was very self-revelatory and self-deprecating. I was in my early 20s and late teens in art school. And my work, a lot of it, was very psychological. And it was about healing. You know, it was really about my mental state and trying to get better. What were you going to say, Alex?
No, yeah. I think you're really right.
So, but anyway, there was a lot of stuff about opening myself up, and I had images, say, of these little figures of opening up your coat, like if you were opening your coat to expose mm-hmm. yourself, and then inside you would have another coat that was opening itself up and exposing mm-hmm. itself. Inside was another coat opening itself, exposing itself, and I made a sculpture like that, and it was works like that. There were sculptural works of mixed media that were about revealing oneself or breaking out or being a better psychological. I was really, well, you know, you feel kind of messed up when you're young. So it was very personal. And I decided in during my master, when getting my master's degree to, to start this form of investigation about my essentialized worldview and basically to portray my inner self as it was revealed to me through psychedelics. I can't not say it. It'd be a lie. But in any case, that was it. My opening came through that, and I felt pressed. I felt like the need to portray that higher state, because it pointed to this higher state that was very visual, so I needed to portray that. And it changed my work entirely. But anyway.
Well, you see, these things are, I would say, it's really just a matter of context in order to see the healing quality of the work. And because it's just like you could say that every work of art has a healing component, no matter what it is, you know, because it becomes part of our life, and whether it brings us down or brings us up or leaves us the same, it gives us it's a litmus test, you know, for our soul. And so your work has the healing light that you've contacted in these heavenly visionary states, and you brought it back through the unique lens of your own soul. And so as a healing example, that in itself, even though you might not regard it, you know, as more than meditation or something, it's a I know you acknowledge how important it is, because in order to stay kind of sane and really together as people, we kind of need to do it. And
but what's more important than meditation?
Well, I think that the as some the Buddhist Dzogchen challenge would be to maintain a sense of meditation throughout your daytime, that if it were possible, you know, to become mindful during your daily life and not to confine your meditation to one thing or another. In the same way, we like to talk about art as a way of sculpting our thoughts, a way of authoring the story of our life. But if we simply become the artist of our life, even as an archetype, just like we talked about the shaman as an archetype, if you take that on as part of your personality, then you see that every act you make is a creative act, and that you can put your creative energy into it more or less, and that you do more or less. Every thought is something that you're authoring, you're sculpting it. So how could you improve it? That's what the artist is always asking. How could I make this better? And so this is how it has a moral component. This is one of the most troubling things to my mind about the association of art and religion, is because artists are notoriously you know, questionable kind of morality and things like that. And so the way that I like to think about it is that we that the ecstatic kind of mass revelry that can sometimes take place at festivals and gatherings that, you know, where loud music is played and there's dancing and things like that, that there's a kind of if there is, you know, and if it isn't a really, you know, dark and foreboding experience, you know, it can be a very uplifting group communion type experience that allows one to think with a degree of hope and confidence about the possibilities of life, you know, that many times are elusive to us, and that we need special circumstances to remind us that not all people are schmucks, and that, in fact, there's an entire dance floor here of friends that are near my age, and by golly, if we can have this much fun together, why can't we do something important? Why can't we save the planet? And so this is where really I think the arts come and help us, you know, and they are here as bridge makers, you know, between realms of consciousness, you know, that we can share our healing dreams, that art as a meditation, as and so that means we encourage the creative lives of all people in whatever ways that they would seek expression, because we think that it's an engagement of a cosmic healing force that is working through us when we work with good intentions, with positive intentions, with intentions based on, well, if art's going to be a spiritual practice, then it's got to be dedicated to a higher power, to a healing force, to a sense of enlightenment, to an evolution of consciousness. And that's why bodhicitta is a great subject to consider in relationship to morality and in relationship to healing, because the healing archetype, I think, is best seen in its awesome radiance as the bodhisattva archetype, the ideal that a being can vow to return to the realm of suffering in order to bring liberation and enlightenment to all beings. And so it's an outlandish vow. It's bound to last countless lifetimes. And it is a offering. And I think it's very related to people when they come closer to a spiritual alliance, that the angels are already surrendered to the Godhead. There is no question, you know. I mean, okay, they talk about rebellious angels, but they're all working together, really. And so you have a community of higher powers that you can call upon and that are part of your process when you're a creative person. And you can just think of it as a kind of spiritual alliance. And the bodhisattvas make a vow that they won't get off the wheel, basically, and join this choir invisible, you know, that they will continue to come back and try to do good, bring benefit to people. And so that kind of selfless generosity and altruistic intention to benefit all beings is something that can be put into practically any kind of effort that one wants to make. If you want to make a painting, why couldn't it be for the benefit of all beings? If you want to make a soup, if you want to you could bring an altruistic intention of enlightenment into it, and it would raise the bar of your intentionality. And so this archetype is another that we talked about, the shaman, we talked about the bodhisattva, one whose being is enlightenment and who has this bodhi, this intention for enlightenment, this what they call bodhicitta. So I just thought I'd throw that healing archetype in, because I think that that's one of the things that art does as a sacred path. It gives us a portal to heaven, and we can see souls that are spread onto skins of canvas.
Right.
And this, there's a uncanny attraction that our human soul has with art objects. And this is, as you were talking about earlier, Allison, the mind. Our soul is using and operating with our mind and is aligning us with symbols that reinforce or help us to recreate and revision our world.
Well, isn't it Nikki, our friend Nikki Singer, who always tells us that all the trouble that we have, any trouble at all, happens in one place and one place only, and that's in the mind. And don't we always remember that? Yeah. So, but I was going to remind you, Alex, of something that you often discuss, which is that, you know, like in depression or in the need to heal, and using art as a you know, sort of a technology to put that whatever is inside of you outside of yourself. Can you talk about that a little bit?
You could do it as well, but the idea is that in psychology, they've studied the transformational process and understand that when we transform, that we are able to get outside of what subjective condition that we were in, and we can see ourselves in a new way, that we somehow objectify the subjective state that we had previously been in. We can look at it and analyze it. So with the art making process, you are literally objectifying your subjective state. And this allows you the ability to evolve your consciousness simply by observing it. If you're in a state of despair, make a picture of it. Then you can look at it, and it's outside of you. And in a way, it may help to, you know, kind of pierce the blister, so to speak, and allow something to come out, and now it's a different thing, you know. And now it's a scab, you know. So art can be a scab, I say, healing the wound of the kind of constricted self.
And you have done paintings where of depression, or despair, one of them's called, right? And there's a painting of, I like the one with the guy.
Hatred.
What's it called?
Endarkenment.
Endarkenment. This guy is wrapped up in chains. He's hauling the burden of the world into the gnarly pit, you know. But behind him, where he can't even see it, the sun is shining. I love that piece because, you know, he doesn't notice. He doesn't look behind him and see the sun is shining. It's right back behind your head. He's looking all into the endarkenment. Anyway,
exactly.
Those are two wonderful pieces. And there's some early works that you did that were very much self-revelatory and actually horrifying and terrifying that you have never, ever exhibited. Do you know that, folks? There are pieces that have come out way later. But, no, those were the Endarkenment period, and you painted them.
Yeah, they were part of my healing journey.
Yes, and then you did Journey of the Wounded Healer, which is an 18-foot painting of the descent into the realm of the material world, and then the explosion of the being. Talk about the explosion of that being in Journey of the Wounded Healer.
Well, I talked about the shamanic process and that there is a dismemberment phase. So since this was the Journey of the Wounded Healer, the first panel became a descent of man, basically. It modeled evolution. And so not only was he descending into the underworld, but basically he was the result of an evolutionary chain and was in a dizzying downward vortex. In the central panel, then, the guy explodes. And so it's in a cosmic space, in an outer space type place where you see a planet, you see stars, you see other planets, but you also see microbes, and you see both the micro and the macro and the body that's splattered everywhere. So it's integrating all the levels of the cosmos in a way, both the micro and the macro. It's becoming a new body because there's a serpent with three heads that's spitting some kind of light that's weaving them together in a new way. And this being then becomes restructured. Now they're a healer and they're going upright. They're going toward the future, toward a crystal mountain. And they're holding a healing staff where the serpents are now caduceus in a kind of hermetic healing staff that the healer slash artist moves toward the future with. So it shows the transformation process that was the initiatory process that humanity perhaps is entering, where we go through a dark night and we hopefully become wounded healers.
I'd like to tell a little bit if we were going to, you know, we only have about 12 or so more minutes, but I wanted to basically talk about one of the pieces that we collaborated on, even with our daughter, Zena, when she was about 8 years old, that I think in many ways was one of the most intentionally healing pieces, although, you know, maybe there were others, but this was called Mending the Heart Net. And it was a performance installation that we were invited to do by Mary Rockwood Lane at the Shands
right.
Children's Hospital in the lobby there. She
yeah.
had put together a program where musicians, artists, and craftspeople came together to make these, experiential environments for children and their families that were in the hospital. Like, a lot of these children had cancer and, you know, in wheelchairs and bald and things like that. So you knew that they were hospitalized and their families were there, and they all got together for Valentine's Day. So we were invited with Dina, our daughter, to come down there and do a wall. We did this installation where we, and Zena helped immensely, where we had anybody who was, you know, going to this big party to write their heart's desires onto these bandages, which we got, and we cut them into strips, and we hung hearts from these bandages, and we had them go over to our big net which we put all over the wall. Now, the wall itself was a famous wall because the wall was made of tiles that all the children and their families from the children's wing of this oncology ward of this hospital had made these ceramic tiles, and they had covered this wall with these tiles. So we didn't want to cover the wall entirely, but we put a net over it, and we hung these hearts on it, and it was called Mending the Heart Net. And Zena and Alex and I did it, and that was our first experience at the University of Florida Medical School and the Arts and Healing Program that Mary initiated there with the help of many people, and especially our dear teacher, Mickey Singer. So anyway, we want to bow in gratitude of, we actually did that piece again for as a year-long installation at the American Visionary Art Museum. We called it simply HeartNet, and thousands of people from all over the world came and hung hearts on our net, which was hung over a world map, you know, and there was a crying eye made of stained glass pouring water into a pool with skeletons in it. I mean, it was a beautiful piece. It was a 60-foot installation that came out of Mending the Heart Net, which we did at the Shands, and became Heart Net at AVAM. And, you know, people can find out more about those things through Alex's books, I just wanted to say, and at cosm.org and places like that. So anyway, just wanted to say that, shout it out for the Shands and the Arts and Healing Program. That's
Thank you.
Bold.
That was the most wonderful event. Alex and Allison, you guys were incredible. And Zena made it so special. And
she always
I'll never
wanted to
how
star,
people
yeah.
healed in just sharing their heart's desire. It was so beautiful. It was a community healing event.
Well, just to complete the description, too, you had the Thanatopic Society there playing harps, and they had little harps for children to try playing real authentic but small-sized harps. I always wanted to play a harp when I was little. I thought that was so wonderful. And they had people doing all kinds of Valentine's crafts. They did, you know, tons of Valentine's crafts. So the Shands has been a supporter of art and healing for decades because of Mary.
Because of my inspiration and my total love for both of you. You both have been really the guides and the wisdom keepers and the visionary artists that have sort of led not only me but thousands of other people to really see the possibilities of how they can experience their own art as healing. And Alex as a visionary artist, and you as an incredible, the secret language and the beautiful art you do, both of you have manifested the divine feminine and the divine masculine, and bringing that sacred union back. And the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors is going to be and is one of the greatest gifts that this world has seen in our lifetime. And for those of you who haven't visited, this is one of the most important pilgrimages that you'll ever make in your life, is to come to the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors and be in this powerful healing environment.
Well, Mary, you know, I won't out us entirely, because what went to Egypt stays in Egypt. But didn't we have some powerful visioning there?
Oh, totally. It was unbelievable.
It was a vision quest.
I recommend it. You both were the epitome of the spirit lovers that have returned to the earth today, that leads us into the light. So thank you both very much for the gifts that you bring all of us in this world today. It's just amazing and such an inspiration and a manifestation of light.
Thank you for putting together such a wonderful program.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, Mary. Thanks for including us in this healing journey that you have brought to the world. You and Mike Samuels and so many other people there at the Shands have done such an amazing service to the world by really deeply investigating the matter of healing in the arts. So we appreciate you being included in what a luminous group. And Gene Watson, what an inspiration to all of us.
Oh, yes.
And
if
Bernie
we just
Siegel,
stay on
how amazing.
Here, if we just stay on, are you going to hear Gene Watson?
Yes, definitely. She's coming up next. And Gene is the
well,
one who introduced me to you. When I went to see Gene, she spoke of Alex's work in the Sacred Mirrors. And I remember it was like something opened to my heart. And I went right to New York and I saw this exhibit. And I didn't know you at the time. And it just was incredible. And it was right at the very beginning. I hadn't started the Shands Arts and Medicine program yet.
Wow.
Your message of that work and my experience of that work was transformative and really led me on my soul's journey. So it was spectacular.
Oh, come on.
God, Mary.
It's true.
Gene is incredible to us. I just want to say before we have to go, Gene saw, heard about the Sacred Mirrors on the radio. When she was driving through Washington, D.C., she heard about Alex's show and drove from Washington, D.C. to New York to see Alex's show at the New Museum. And I thought, and then she brought all that work out there to the University of Colorado in Boulder. Alex had such a huge and one of the very rare occasion of showing all the Sacred Mirrors in one place. It was an incredible honor. And we are so grateful to the nursing community for their connection with Alex's work and their connection with all of their people that they share it with too. It's been a wonderful, wonderful community that we've been in touch with over the years. And thanks to Gene.
And you, Mary.
And
thank
you
both. Thank you so much.
All right. We'll be standing by now. What should we do?
Right.
Should we turn off our